Welcoming Patrick Rosenstiel from National Popular Vote to Party Line on WBEV this morning. Good morning, Patrick.
Morning, Bob.
Thank you so much for your patience. My difficulty with the board this morning.
Third time's the charm, right? No problem at all. Grateful to be here.
I love your spirit. You and I were chatting beforehand. You're over in Minneapolis, or in the Twin Cities, I guess. You're a Packer fan. How did that come about? Where are you from originally?
Yeah, and I grew up in Whitefish Bay, so I'm a Blue Duke.
And
once a Packer fan, always a Packer fan. It doesn't matter where you live. So go Pack.
We always love having Packer fans on Party Line as our guests. We're going to be talking about the National Popular Vote, the program, the organization you've been with for quite some time. As I look at this, the U.S. Constitution said that a group of state-appointed electors should select our president every 4 years. Do we need to change that? Is there something wrong with that?
Well, no, you don't need to change it. You can have a national popular vote for president, which is what most Americans want, and you do not have to change the Constitution because, you read Article 2, Section 1, you're right that the states award electors, but the Constitution is moot on method, right? So the founders in Article 2, Section 1 wrote 17 words, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. So the individual state legislatures can determine how they're going to award electors. On Wisconsin, like Minnesota, we have a state-based winner-take-all law. That's nowhere in the Constitution. That's a state law that was adopted in Madison. Maine and Nebraska have a congressional district law. They have a different law. They changed their method. Didn't require a constitutional amendment. So what national popular vote is, it's a movement to get the states to use that power to award their electors on the basis of who wins the most popular votes in all 50 states in the District of Columbia. So far, 18 states have chosen to do that, or 17 states and the District of Columbia, with 209 electoral votes, which means when states with 61 more electoral votes do it, we will have a national popular vote for president. So the agreement stipulates there has to be a majority of the Electoral College or the majority of the electoral votes in the compact, which triggers it. And then those states award their electors in block to whoever wins the national popular vote. This sounds a little complicated, but it's not. It's totally constitutional. It uses the power within the Constitution. And when our bill or when our compact takes effect, we will have a national popular vote for president.
How long has this effort been underway? How long have you been with National Popular Vote?
Yeah, so I've been involved since 2007 myself. Our chairman really started drafting the Interstate Compact, which is 888 words. You know, if your listeners want to go to nationalpopularvote.com, they can see a copy of the bill. Good news is that...
Patrick, now I've lost you. There you go.
Yeah.
You with me, Patrick?
I am, yeah.
Okay. You're just breaking up on your end.
Oh, well, I haven't moved. So in the end, what I was saying is that we started the movement in 2005.
Sure.
And I joined the movement in 2007.
You mentioned that you need, I think you said, 61 more electoral votes from various states committing to sending their electors to vote for the person who has the majority of votes in the national popular vote. I understand Michigan is the next state that is kind of in the offing. Tell us the status of that.
Well, I would say Michigan is definitely a state that we've been very involved with over the years. We've had bills introduced in Wisconsin. We've had bills introduced in every state that haven't yet joined the compact. I don't make predictions about who moves next. I will tell you that we've passed one chamber or another, either the House or the Senate, in seven additional states with 74 electoral votes, right, which is more than enough to put us over the top and deliver a national popular vote for president. And the reason we think that's important is because we think every voter in every state should be equally relevant in presidential elections. And the current system, of course, forces the presidential campaigns to campaign in just battleground states. And the truth is even in battleground states, courts are more likely to decide the outcome of those states than any voter is. So, the truth is what we want is we want a system governed by one person, one vote, where the candidate with the most votes in all 50 states in the District of Columbia wins the presidency, right? And by extension, makes every voter in every state politically relevant in every presidential election. And we don't believe that's a controversial idea.
Again, Patrick Rosenstiel from National Popular Vote, my guest this morning here on WBEV's Party Line program. You mentioned the effort has been proposed here in the state of Wisconsin. What is the status of the state of Wisconsin vis-a-vis the National Popular Vote in your compact?
Well, I think our chief sponsor is Kelda Helen Royce, I don't know that there's any committee action scheduled, but what we're doing is going through the legislature trying to build political support or legislative support for the bill, and when we have it, we would expect there to be committee hearings, and that would be the process in Wisconsin, right? Various states are in various phases of the process, and right now we're building legislative support towards a hearing that could advance the bill. When that hearing happens, if we pass out of committee, it would go to the floor in the House or the Senate, and both chambers would pass it and send it to the governor for signature if the support exists within the Wisconsin legislature. What's important to understand is whether Wisconsin joins or doesn't join, right? When states with a majority of the Electoral College have joined this compact and 270 electors are in place, we will have a national popular vote for president, because what those states do with their electors is up to them. And so Wisconsin, we hope they do join, but even if they don't, they'll benefit from the compact if they believe a national popular vote for president's a good idea.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say they can keep their current law, right, because they get to determine how they're going to award their electors. But if 270 electoral votes are awarding their electors on the basis of who wins the most popular votes, you know, every voter in Wisconsin will be politically relevant in every presidential election, not just when Wisconsin's a battleground state.
I guess what you're summarizing is this would be majority rule. If a majority of the state, if a majority of the electoral votes are going to be determined this way, then that's how the president will be elected.
Yeah, that's how a president is elected. Whoever gets a majority, it requires a majority of electoral votes to be elected president. That's why we've set the triggering mechanism here at 270 electoral votes. Because we don't want the compact to take effect, right, until it's decisive, until there's the payoff of every voter in every state being relevant.
I've seen this statistic several times in the last year. I'll quote the Pew Research Center says, quote, nearly two-thirds of U.S. adults, 65%, say the way the president is elected should be changed so that the winner of the popular vote nationwide wins the presidency, end quote. How do you see the two sides? How do people fall on either side of this? Two-thirds of Americans agree the national popular vote should determine the winner. A third of them don't. How do you see, what are the sides for individuals as they look at what you're proposing, Patrick?
Well, what I'll say is I don't know of any other election reform issue that's enjoys two-thirds support from the American voters and in such a bipartisan way. So the truth is the two-thirds and the one-thirds, you know, I don't know what makes them different. I think the people who oppose the national popular vote interstate compact might be afraid of two things, right? They're either afraid of their ideas or afraid of the voters, right? And I think if that's the case, you know, you might look to a new line of work if you're in politics, right? I don't think you should be afraid of the voters or afraid of your ideas. But when you look at that two-thirds, I mean, I think it's really important to turn out. That includes 47% of Republicans like myself, right? Like I'm, it's not like a partisan divide, right? National popular vote is a movement of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, liberals, conservatives, and moderates who simply believe that one person, one vote should govern our presidential election. So it's not a partisan divide. In most of the states where we pass, I would say all of them, with the exception of one, you know, it's been Republicans and Democratic legislators working together to pass the bill. And it's simply because they want their voters to matter in presidential elections, because when they matter in elections, that means the state has some influence, you know, with the president, which is what electors are all about anyway, right? Is to make sure that, you know, voters have some role in selecting and directing the president of the United States. So, you know, in the end, what I think, if you look deeper into that Pew poll, you'll see 47% of Republicans, 63% of moderate to liberal Republicans. You know what I mean? But real data behind that poll, you know, more than 70% of young voters, like the youngest cohort of voters that are pretty soon going to be the biggest cohort of voters, right? 70% of young people want a national popular vote for president. And so, you know, while I don't predict what state's going to go next, I do have one prediction, which is if everybody who supports a national popular vote for president goes to nationalpopularvote.com and writes their legislator, voters generally get what they want, right? And this project will get done, and we will have a national popular vote for president. And I hope 2024, as the last time, where 4 out of 5 American voters will be totally ignored, right? Where courts are more likely to pick the presidents based on how they rule on ballot counting, right, in battleground states, and that every American voter, like I hope the next presidential election, every American voter is valued in that election, because I think the current system is ripping our country apart at the seams. I mean, in the end, I don't, you know, I've been following government and politics for a very long time. I'm a 55-year-old guy, right, and I've been involved in these kinds of things. I've never seen our country more divided, and I've never seen our governing institutions more at risk than they are today in my lifetime. And in the end, what I believe is when every voter has an equal say in who the president of the United States is, my hope is we'll all get better at living with the results, right? And that we'll all craft a message that unites America, doesn't, you know, divide it. And in the end, that's, you know, there are no silver bullets in politics or government. But certainly, I think this is the reform that can do the most good for the most people to improve our politics, right, and preserve what I think is the biggest contribution of America to the world, right, our Republican form of government grounded in democracy. So that's my hope.
Let me, again, Patrick Rosenstiel is my guest this morning here on WBEV's Party Line. Let me just ask you maybe a historical question. Why did the framers in our Constitution set it up so that these electors, those were air quotes around electors, are actually the people who are choosing our president? What's the historical background to this?
Well, they took 30, you know, votes over 22 separate days to try to determine how they would elect the president. Okay, so, you know, at first there was a discussion about, you know, whether Congress could select the president. And obviously, you know, they wanted to provide a delicate balance of power at the federal level, right? They didn't want Congress taking the president, because then the president would be a creature of Congress, right? They had a vote on whether or not white landed men, you know what I mean, who they would have the right to vote, would pick the president, okay, by popular vote. That failed to reach majority support the convention. And so in the end, what they did is they compromised and they said, we're going to form an electoral college, right, which kicked off a series of votes on how these electors would be directed, right? So, for example, they had a vote on whether a governor would appoint a council that would pick electors, or they had a vote on presidential elector districts where white landed men, because women, black minorities could not vote at the time, would vote for an elector, right, from these presidential elector districts. None of that achieved majority support, and so they came up with the language they came up with. They believed that the state legislature was the body of government closest and most sovereign to the people, that the legislature should determine, without directing them, the method they would use to award electors. And I think the biggest small-eye ignorance around an issue like this is that somehow, some way, the way we've been doing it was picked by the founders. You know, the state-based winner-take-all law that Wisconsin has in place, a majority of the states didn't even have that law until the 11th presidential election. The way the state-based system came about was in the lead-up to the Civil War. The North and the South adopted state-based winner-take-all laws so they could make sure that their electors supported their, cultural, economic, and political interests when they were selecting a president. So the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, for example, has had 13 different methods with which they've awarded electors. Okay? So now what we have is a relic of a system where 4 out of 5 voters are ignored. Battleground state courts pick presidents based on how they determine hair-splitting lawsuits, and nobody is ever happy with the result. And then American presidents have to defend their legitimacy to the world, right? Because they're not speaking with the full-throated support of the most American voters. So national popular vote can give presidents that bully pulpit for the world. It can bring us together as a country because at least we know the candidate with the most votes won. And American presidents won't have to constantly fight to define their legitimacy to half of the American people, which is what the current system sort of delivers, right? Chaos, lack of confidence. Some people used to say it delivered the peaceful transfer of power. I would argue it doesn't anymore, you know, based on recent examples. So in the end, I felt like the burden of proof was on the proponents of change. You know what I mean? I don't believe that anymore. If you want to defend this current system, you own it. And in the end, there's nothing defensible about the current system. Certainly not that the founders created the current system, because they didn't. That's just plain ignorance.
It seems to me there are 3 different reasons for doing what you suggest. Let me run through them one at a time and let you just comment. First of all, in the last, 24 years, we've had 2 presidents elected who didn't have the majority of the votes. Patrick, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I agree. And what's the truth is they were legitimate presidents that ran under the current system where they won the battleground states. But what happens is they lack legitimacy when they govern or are constantly defending their legitimacy. And I'll just tell your listeners, I voted for both of those candidates and support a national popular vote for president.
You're talking about eliminating some of the hair splitting that takes place after the vote is in November, because if we take 300 million people in this country voting, or 200 million adults, it's much less likely we're going to have a split of 2,000 or 4,000 votes swinging one way or the other, rather than hanging chads in Florida and the controversy we had after the last presidential election. Your comment?
100% accurate, 100% true. You don't have to go far. You can go look at the last presidential election that was decided by courts in Arizona and Pennsylvania. And then an entire movement about stopping the steal, where half the country feels like the election was robbed from them. In a national popular vote election, no election will ever be that close, and the candidate with the most votes will win.
Lastly, I live in the state of Wisconsin. I work for a radio station, and come October and November, we're going to get plenty of money. We're going to have a lot of political ads. We're a swing state in Wisconsin. Doesn't that advantage us? And how do people in New York, very liberal, or in Alabama, very conservative, how do those people feel when their vote doesn't matter?
Well, I think the Pew poll points to that, right? 2/3 of America wants a national popular vote for president because 2/3 of America is totally ignored in presidential elections, right? And all I'd say to Wisconsin is a couple of things, which is swing state status is fleeting. Because Wisconsin's a swing state today doesn't mean it's going to be a swing state tomorrow, right? And when it is, Wisconsin voters should not be irrelevant in presidential elections. And then I'd urge you to think about whether or not being a swing state voter is all it's cracked up to be. Well, there might be a lot of ads. I think people get sick of the ads. But more importantly, think about the trade wars during the Trump administration. You know what I mean? Where he threaded the needle to win Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, the first Republican candidate to do that in 24 years, and he couldn't do it the second time. Well, he started trade wars. And where was the retaliation from foreign governments? For example, when he put tariffs up on European goods, the first industry they targeted was Harley-Davidson motorcycle with retaliatory tariffs and duties. Why? Because it's headquartered in the battleground state of Wisconsin, right? Or sugar beet farmers in the thumb of Michigan, which at one point was a battleground state. So the truth is foreign governments are figuring out how to weaponize battleground state status against battleground states right, to do damage to the American president, the political damage necessary. So, you know, I'm not sure being a battleground state is all it's cracked up to be.
Do you perceive the attitudes of Americans changing on this issue? You say you've been involved in this for a number of years now, Patrick. Has the electorate, has the opinion of the voting public changed?
And that's been pretty steady in support. The question is, do the pendulum swing on sort of a partisan basis? So, for example, prior to the 2016 presidential election, you know, the state of Utah, you know, there was 88% support in the state of Utah. I think if you look at that Pew poll, you'll see how after the 2016 election, Republican support dipped to 27% after a divergent election, which created headwinds. But now since then, right, it's recovered to 47% and continues to grow in the independent Pew research. So in the end, I think support for a national popular vote always hovers around two-thirds to higher, you know what I mean? You know, and it takes a little bit of time for that to bake in. And what's more important than the polling, right, is everybody who believes that a national popular vote for president can improve our politics and by extension improve our democracy and preserve our institutions of government in a way that's helpful and useful. What they really need to do is not respond to pollsters, but they should keep doing that. What they need to do is write their legislator. Because in the end, when legislators decide we're going to have a national popular vote for president, there's only one way to get one, which is the national popular vote plan that is at nationalpopularvote.com.
We need to wrap things up, and I know you have to take off as well, Patrick. If someone feels strongly about this, if they'd like more information, again, where can they reach out to your organization? Give contact information for people who'd like to find out more.
Yeah, best place to go is nationalpopularvote.com. There's a lot of information there. Clearly, it is a portal on information. I think it's also fair because we raise some of the objections that have been against our bill. Call it the myth fact section. We answer them. You know what I mean? So we try to get people information so they can decide if they're for a national popular vote for president. And if they are, we give them an opportunity to write their legislator and weigh in. I guess if they're not, we give them an opportunity to write their legislator and weigh in too. But in the end, you know, that's where I'd go for any information.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate you joining us today here on WBEV in Beaver Dam. Have a great weekend, and we'll be rooting for the Packers together come fall.
Yeah, let's go J-Love, right? And everybody else.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right. You too, Bob. Thanks.
Again, from the National Popular Vote, senior consultant Patrick Rosensteel, our guest this morning here on WBEV's Party Line. The Want Ad Show coming your way in about 9 minutes. We have upcoming world and national news from ABC.